Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Are you ready for a journey? A journey that'll take you back in time and also deal with the present. We're going to be talking about a very unique and a fascinating publication, Ghost Flower, Space, Time, Destiny. What do those three words mean to you? Space, time, destiny. Well, a gentleman that I had the privilege of interviewing more than once on my radio show, William Merck, and he also was featured on one of my television shows. William has a knack for writing. When he wrote Ghost Flower, he went in to a level that deals with time travel and so much more. It is an incredible read. Sadly, he passed away in March of 2024. But before he did, this story was finished. We have with us this evening his lovely wife, Xenia, and she actually had done the art in the book, was very much involved with it, made sure that it did come into publication. And Xenia, I want to welcome you to the show. This book is really incredible what Bill was able to do to be able to produce this. Welcome to the show.
Oh, Donna, thank you so much. And thank you for this opportunity to connect with you and with your audience, because this book is really very special. So I'm so happy to be here with you.
When I was reading the book, and Bill, with his extensive background and knowledge, was able to link spaces of time. And this actually does involve a time machine. And it is something that people have talked about for generations. There are movies that were made a long time ago regarding, you know, being transported into different points of time, going backwards and forwards in time. And this is something that has captured the imagination of people, oh my goodness, for I don't know how long. And then, of course, we had Star Trek that came out, and people were transported, and Gene Roddenberry brought in a whole new dimension of thought regarding space, traveling in outer space, dealing with the shifts and challenges that have come with going into that has never been explored before. And here we are today with Bill's book, and he has incorporated so much in this, dealing with the modern-day world. Actually, he starts off with 2034, and this is something that takes place in the Arctic Circle. And it's with a group of scientists and researchers. And I delighted in the artwork, the art piece that you put of a ancient mammoth that is on the opening page to that beginning part of the book. This must have been quite a fascinating journey, since you were very much involved in the artistic side of this, to be able to share this with what your husband was producing, and to be able to see all of the various aspects that he produced in this book, dealing with space, time, and destiny, as we like to use that word to describe that sometimes that we are supposed to experience, never imagining the journey it'll take us on. What was that like for you?
This entire experience has been incredible. It starts with Bill. He just went after this book. He went after it. He had always loved science fiction. He had always loved the galaxies. He had loved all of these aspects you've mentioned with time travel. And he really wanted to write this science fiction book, although I will tell you, I believe this is real. I believe this is real. He had such a vast knowledge base, and he wove it all into this book. It's just incredible. And really, I was inspired as he was writing it. But then after he passed over, and I dealt with a lot of administrative things, and I got on the book, I was so inspired by this book that I talked with his editor, and then I spent that first weekend drawing and sketching and painting because I was so inspired by him. He was just incredible. And I know he was with me during that entire time of this sketching and drawing. And so I feel that this is really with him in publishing this book. It's a huge collaboration and one that is just a gift. It's been a gift to me.
Mm-hmm. I can understand why. 2034, Arctic Circle, Northern Hemisphere. And here you have these various people. You have Maggie, you have Gary, they're on glacier ice. And his descriptions of the individuals that he writes about, both in what we would call the present, 2034, that's just 10 years away from where we are right now, or 9 years, actually. But that is something that he is very, very skilled in doing. And he hadn't written a book like this before. His other books were on leadership. This one, though, ends up with each section dealing with what we would describe as the present. And then we go from the Arctic, we go to Boston, Massachusetts. And immediately there is this engagement with characters that are dealing with bacteria, they're dealing with viruses. These are scientists, researchers that are dealing, for all intents and purposes, with a potential devastating pandemic that could just be incredible. And all of this has to do with the variables that exist in the present. And they're trying to figure out what they can use, what they can do to counteract this, because it came out of nowhere. And right now we're dealing with a lot of apprehension on the part of people when they are doing actual research like this today, trying to figure out about bacteria, all kinds of viruses that have been literally frozen for thousands and thousands of years, and they're going to have the chance to come to life. How do we work with that? How is that going to be handled? So many different things that he brings in right at the book's beginning. And I think that's totally captivating because it deals with what we're facing right now.
Donna, it does. And it, so the book is set, you know, in the beginning, as you say, it's set in the future. But all of these principles and activities apply to everything right now as well. And that's why this book is just so pertinent, because it hits home on so many issues on so many levels.
Very, very true. Now, I delighted in this Dr. Ada, or Ada, however that would be pronounced, but she and a number of the female characters in the book had a great deal of strength, talent, intelligence, and it really is a demonstration of how in the world that is present, there's been major shifts and changes that have evolved. But, oh my goodness, this time machine situation is really critical. And that is where Ghost Flower begins to come in. This is a flower that did exist, and it was all related to the Black Plague, which I found extremely intriguing. What did he know about the Black Plague? plague in that particular flower. Was that something that actually was noted in a history book somewhere?
Well, actually, we do, after the fact, as a part of the research and the comments from our editor, there were comments from her about the Great Plague and how it lasted more than 400 years, and that a remote village in England, you know, some people managed to resist that plague and survive. And later, there's a book, a documentary called The Riddle of the Plague Survivors, and where it was discovered that people who inherited a certain DNA blocking mechanism, a Delta 32 gene, that had been passed down by their European ancestors were not affected. It was later found that AIDS was also blocked by people carrying this gene. So there are so many parallels in this book to actual occurrences. And again, I go back to, I really believe this is real because there are just so many things where these parallels surface all throughout his work. I wanted to mention one thing you commented about Dr. Ada Sandell and the team that goes back in time in the time machine and the role of women. Bill's leadership is just amazing, and he uses everything in this book. He wrote his first book on leadership, his second book on finding breadcrumbs, finding a philosophy of life, and throughout his career, he has empowered people to do the right thing, that have worked with him, have worked for him, but he has empowered people all along the way. And so I really see Bill as a servant leader. He's very selfless, but he empowered people. And in this book, it's very important to see how he empowered women. And everybody on the team for this mission. So these are just very important points that, knowing Bill, I just know how important all of this was to him.
Mm-hmm. I would concur. And choosing the 1500s, and of course this was the time when Queen Elizabeth was in place, there were the wars with Spain, all of these various components. But what was most fascinating is that the time machine that they actually experienced, the people that had developed, and the story that goes into this is just, it's just quite captivating. And with the time machine itself actually, I'll use the word self-destructed, because it had been developed to a point it could send somebody back into a particular time of history, but it would not be able to retrieve them. The machine was not designed and developed enough. There had been a series of situations, and it was really quite interesting. But the pandemic, the looming pandemic that was going to affect literally billions of people, then it was something that there was a sense of urgency, and these people had to be willing to sacrifice themselves, I'll use that terminology, because they weren't going to be coming back home. They weren't going to be coming back to the present time when they, if it was successful, they didn't even know that they were going to be put back in the exact time frame that they were aiming for, because there was a specific reason, and that's where Ghost Flower comes in. And this is something that when you think about it, when it comes to research, when it comes to doing anything like that, there are sacrifices that have to be made. I think of Dr. Jonas Salk before he released permission to use the polio vaccine. He used it on himself and his family, and he had young children. And he said, we can't let this go out to the population until we know if this is going to be something that can be, you know, used by people. And he was willing to sacrifice his family, and his family said, yes, let's do this, because it'll save the lives of thousands and thousands of children. Adults were affected as well, but it really hit the kids. And this is something that when you look at those examples, that often is forgotten by people, maybe not even thought of when it comes to doing research. And this team that volunteered, and each one in the team had specific talents. When they volunteered, they knew they were not coming back home, as we would like to say it. They were going to have to create. If they survived this transport into time past, they would have to survive in the very environment that they had chosen to do their exploration in. That's a very dramatic statement about human character, isn't it?
It is. And I, you know, this is where Bill and his humanitarian mission in his life just is all encapsulated into this book. The humanitarian mission of finding a cure for this disease, but then the selflessness of these people who have volunteered to go back in time to try to find this cure to help the people in the future. It really is about doing the right thing and being and following through with that humanitarian mission.
1500s. When it comes to health, when it comes to wellness, most people did not live very long. Their lifespan was extraordinarily sharp. Number one, they didn't have good food available. Number two, England was a toxic mess, especially in the heavily populated areas like London. Mm-hmm. Disease, rampant filth. It was the same thing in France. Awful. Europe was in the Dark Ages. It was just absolutely one of the most unpleasant environments you could be in. You had the Inquisition that had gone on, all of this that was there. And I was fascinated with the introduction of information relative to a monk and how at that in the 1500s, paper had been invented where vellum as a material for books was literally going to be considered obsolete. And it gives a demonstration of how things were quickly changing in the 1500s with the Dark Ages, but it was so, I mean, medicine was almost non-existent. The herbalists that knew different types of things to look for, they had a better chance of surviving and living to old age than the people did of the time. He gives an intriguing, dynamic insight into what life really was like. And I can remember people trying to romance that era. And I go, excuse me, what's romantic about a time when one, most people didn't have enough food to survive on? And number two, medical care was literally non-existent. Children died often before they even reached their third birthday. It really was a very, very harsh time for humanity that lived in Europe.
Well, it certainly was. And I think, I agree totally that Bill captured so many of those details so that you could really feel and be immersed in that time period. So this book is wonderful because it deals with the present, it deals with the past, it deals with so many different eras, and he describes each of them with such detail that you feel that you're there. And I think that's one of the strengths of this book, because when I read his work, I feel that I'm there. Mm-hmm. Now, in my case, I may have been there with him, I believe, in the 1500s. So my situation's a little bit different with the soul ties that I have with him. But I think for the reader, his book and his descriptions are so good that you really feel that you're there.
I concur. Also, and of course he had been in the military, and there's a great deal of exposure that he had to a lot of history, I'm sure, but the history of transport, and that primarily was done with ships. Now, people did transport across land, but the seas and the waterways were the freeways of that era. And that era, there was an introduction which fascinated me of a catamaran. But he goes into so much detail about how you know, you had to take care of your ships. And, of course, there's a captain and there's all of these phenomenal characters that he brings in. But the sea, really, it was the transport. It might take you a month, 2 months, to get a letter from England to Spain just because of weather conditions, the very environments that we just look at today and would think, gee, it's no big deal to travel 500 miles, 1,000 miles. We fly. We have planes that they're improving all the time, where we're going to be going almost at the speed of sound at one point. So this is something that, as we're looking, if we take ourselves from where we are right now and then stepping back into that time frame, there were innovations that were coming about, like the rifle. I was astonished to learn about how there had been a German man who had actually invented the rifle long before it was ever accepted. Gee, that sounds like an old story. That's what happened with Tesla. I mean, it's really fascinating what he brings out, these little twists and turns, and the use of copper on ships, and how the Chinese had been developing that to keep barnacles from, you know, adhering to the bottom of a ship, because you had to clean those ships. And it just, all this innovation that's going along at the same time that is not generally known in the 1500s for quite a while. But here are these different people in history who actually had come up with concepts, but the people were not open to the concepts. The average individual, even though they might have been considered very educated in their time, they were frightened. They were terrified. The witch hunts, all of this, it makes for a fascinating read.
You hit on just one of the most important points, and that is innovation. Bill, going back to his leadership, he was an innovator. He was always looking for ways to solve problems, the ways to get things done, to bring people together. And so you can see where he migrates to innovation in all of these different aspects, as you mentioned with the catamaran and how fast it could go as opposed to other ships. The new type of rifle that was being developed that had a longer distance where the bullets could go. So the innovation and his interest in innovation is just, you know, also woven through the book as well.
There was, in that time, those persons on the seagoing voyages where they might have been pirates. They ended up being privateers. And those privateers were hired by governments to steal treasures from other governments because they were transported on the sea waters. And, you know, you look at this and you have to look at our world today and the same game is being played. How do we take from someone who has and utilize it ourselves? Well, that is a common pattern of humanity, the copycat syndrome. We just have different costumes at this time. And I was so intrigued with the various aspects that were going on, like with Cuba. He brings up how there is an interest by the English in taking over the country of Cuba. This brings to anybody who reads this book the understanding that people did not just sit in rocking chairs on the front porches. Of course, they didn't have rocking chairs, I don't think, at that time. But anyway, in the 1500s. But people were looking at transportation. International trade had been going on for a good deal of time before the 1500s. And this is what people do. This is commercial enterprise. This is something the English, we have Lloyd's of London that was developed in England for insurance purposes. There are so many different things that occurred at a later time that actually were built upon experiences that people had gone through in previous generations. And we're doing the same thing right now, aren't we?
Well, Donna, absolutely. This book, and especially as you mentioned, the trade and the aspects there. This is a history lesson in this book that brings some of those issues to the forefront. Because as you say, I think people right now don't really, if you were to say what was happening in 1585, it would be, well, they might talk about Shakespeare. But all of these other aspects were going on with trade, commerce, innovation. And I think Bill was really honing in on all of those aspects and captured those very well.
Life is complicated. That comes out in a statement in one chapter. And the chapters, interestingly enough, are not all that long. And so he's able to weave the past in with the present, but there is what I would call a synchronicity and a patterning of processing, thinking, the women that have been transported into this time frame are very, very skilled. They have martial arts skills. They are very well educated in our time frame, the present. And here they are in an environment where women are considered nothing more than chattel. They're not supposed to be very well educated. They're not even supposed to ride a horse. And I went, excuse me? Oh, boy. But, of course, we see the images of Queen Elizabeth on a horse. But it was, I think, side saddle or the equivalent thereof. And this, it just is really eye-opening, I think, for a young person to read this. It might intrigue them enough to really start getting into history, because I think knowing history empowers us to realize how human nature hasn't changed all that much. It really hasn't changed that much. We still have the same situations. However, there is a fascinating, and I'm not going to give it away, there is a fascinating aspect that is done relative to planning and organization, and it is relative to the present, but it's all organized and planned in the past. That's all I'm going to say about it. It is totally captivating as a book, and I think all of the different points of history that he brings out so much of an understanding of why where we are right now, having gone through COVID, most people recognize that the vaccines, and I use the plural because they were developed by different companies, those vaccines are a precursor of demonstrating how we need to really think in advance when it comes to viruses, bacteriums, all kinds of things that exist there. These are life forms, and we need to look at how we can possibly deal with them because of the mutations that they go through. And this is something that's brought out in the book, but yet it is the plant kingdom, typically. All pharmaceuticals basically are based chemically on plants anyway. But it's what can we find? And that's where the title Ghost Flower is so significant. Because there's something in the past that assisted people. They didn't know what it was. They didn't have the science for it. But we have a science today that can do amazing things. But there's always that challenge. How do we find out from the past what we can utilize in the present to make a difference? Ghost Flower, space, time, destiny, your artwork in it, Senia, is so complementary to what Bill has done. He's left a phenomenal legacy here, and I think those people that want to be more aware of what time travel really can encompass, this would be a wonderful book for them to read, because it creates a shift in the thinking and in the observations that we as human beings, what we've had to go through to actually get to the point of knowledge that we have on so many levels at this time. And we have barely scratched the surface of what we are going to be able to expand into. And that is another part of the story that Bill left as well. Now, Sanya, you have Bill's website that people can go to. That's William F. like Frank Merck, M. like Mary, ERCK.com. Are you doing book tours at this time?
We're working on a series of marketing efforts right now, and actually one of the things that we're working on is a companion journal that includes the sketches, a paragraph on the sketches on what inspired me, a lot of my collaboration with Bill in that, and then questions for the reader that tie back to the chapters. So that is something that we're working on right now that's soon to be published. But yes, we will be doing book tours. This for me is my passion. Bill has left me this fabulous gift, and working on it, I feel connected to him. So it's important to me. It's part of my mission to continue on with this book and really promote it. So Donna, I really thank you so much. And thank you to your audience as well.
It has been my pleasure, and I want my audience to again know the website, William F. like Frank Merck, MERCK.com. And Sanya, I think it's going to have a life of its own. And I think you're going to find that there are so many different perceptions that people will share. I think this is a great book for a book club, for people to discuss each chapter, or maybe a couple of chapters, because some of them are rather short. But I think dealing with the concepts that Bill brings out in this book in that sci-fi kind of a format really will create some very interesting conversations. I wish you nothing but the best, and do let me know when you come out with the next publication.
Donna, I will. Thank you so very much. So good to connect with you.
My pleasure. And we are saying goodbye to Sanya Merck. And for those of you that maybe had tuned in late, this book was completed before March of 2024. And Bill started working on it in 2023. And I had the pleasure of having him as a guest both on my previous shows as well as on one of my television shows. So if you want to go in and check out the television programming, and it's one on leadership, you will find that conversation. You'll be able to actually see Bill and hear his commentary that he shared for that program. Anyway, we're taking a bit of a break. We're going to be back in just a moment, so stay with me. The Donna Sebo Show is heard weekdays, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. Callers are welcome to call in during the second half of the program at 253-582-5597. Please note that the announcement is made at the bottom of the hour if I'm not in studio able to take phone calls. Warriors for Peace is heard every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. For current information regarding my email newsletter, programming, and appearances, go to DelphiInternational.com. For information on publications, including my award-winning children's books, audiobooks, and more, go to MrsSebo'sClassics.com. This is Donna Sebo. If you or someone you know is an author and would like to be interviewed on The Donna Sebo Show or Warriors for Peace, please send a copy of the publication along with contact information, phone number, email, and website to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review. Thank you. Well, I wanted to let you know, those of you that might be listening that are authors, if you would like to be featured on my television show, we are looking forward to starting filming for programming for 2025 this coming February. And my goodness, it just seems like the days are flying by. So all you need to do, if you would like to be considered to be a guest on my television show, I would need a copy of your book, and also you would need to contact me through DelphiInternational.com. That's my website. Just Google my name, Donna Sebo, S-E-E-B-O, and you'll be given a link instantaneously by Google. But what I would say is, just be sure you put your contact information in there so that I can be in touch with you. Then you could just leave me a message, and then I will get back to you as quickly as I can. So again, if you're an author and you would like to be considered for being on the television program, I then need that detail from you about how I can reach you, and I will send you the information so that you will have that available. Okay, now I'm not going to be available for anybody to call in if you so desire to chat with me, but I've got some odds and ends of information that I thought I would share with you. Oh, and by the way, if you want to view any of my television programs, just go to my network page and you'll find that there is a video link tab, and you can tap on that and you'll find the Donna Sebo Show Special Editions. All of the series that we've done so far are available for your viewing pleasure 24/7. Also, don't forget about the Author's Showcase. The people that are featured there have been supporters of the program, and you can watch all of their interviews on television as listen to those that have been on my radio show as well, and their contact information is there for you if you wanted to be in touch with them. Okay, so we have that, and I come across some of the most curious and unique information. It crosses my desk and I'll go, wow, I didn't know that. Do you have an interest in learning new things? I do. And there is so much I find I don't know. And the old adage is, what you don't know, well, it far outweighs what you think you do know. And my goodness, as people come around and as they are growing and developing different things, my goodness, I just saw something recently about a whole new development that's coming to the public awareness. Of course, it costs thousands of dollars, but it is a computer that is just like a mini kind of a computer that actually will expand for you. And then, of course, we're eventually going to have the holographic situation where we can maybe carry everything in a pin and use a blank wall, and we're able to effectively have a computer that we're able to communicate with. And I look at some of the sci-fi movies that have come out, both of Marvel production and some others, and here is all of this technology that is so sophisticated that most of us will look at it and say, thanks, but I think that's going to be out of my pocketbook or wallet range. It just, I don't have the change available to pay for that. But it's already been in people's minds. When I first started my programming back in 2001, in the very early years, I found that I had the privilege of interviewing people that actually had worked with Gene Roddenberry on Star Trek. These were physicists that were already working on items that are just now, in some respects, coming to the attention of the public. So there are these think tanks that have been around for a very, very long period of time. And those think tanks are set up so that people can use their creative imagination. It's been done with robotics that we're seeing very sophisticated at this time relative to what has been. But there's been all kinds of futuristic thinking and adaptation. But like so many times in history, the general environment cannot deal, the general environment of humanity has a very difficult time dealing with changes that come about far too fast. So it's fascinating. We're speeding up our thinking processes as individuals, as human beings, is at a much different level than even the 1800s. And this is something that as technology advances, we are finding out more about our own capabilities, but we also have to use wisdom because we will, and, you know, it's just a fact, we will actually undermine ourselves, which we have done a very good job of so far, if we are not cognizant of how to keep a balance. And that's one of the big lessons that we're learning at a very fast rate right now. So many wonderful things are occurring. And yes, there's chaos, but think about it. Most of us really don't get what we need to learn without experience. And that's exactly what we're going through right now. Mother Earth has been here billions of years, and she's got a very, very, very long lifespan. So we just need to know we are the ones that have to grow up. We are the ones that have to understand things. Now, I will share something with you that may not even pique your interest. Have you ever seen a centipede? I have seen a lot of centipedes, but not in real life. And they are amazing creatures because they have a whole bunch of legs on them. And they're absolutely fascinating to watch because of the synchronization when they're moving of all those legs that just go in harmony. Well, there is a centipede, and there's many different species of same. It's a redhead. Mm-hmm. And it is red. It's red and black, has a good-sized set of antennas, and my goodness, it has got all of those legs. And this is something that researchers, very intrigued by centipedes. Now, if you're like me, you'd probably say, thank you very much, but I'll skip. I'm just not into bugs that much. But there are people that are absolutely fascinated with them. And there's a reason to do that. This particular centipede, scientists from the University of Queensland found that the pinchers that you can get bitten with or by with the centipede, they actually produce two different types of venom. Okay, so you have that. Their prey are crickets. So they help to keep cricket populations down. And then another poison is a defense against something that wants to eat it. Mm-hmm. So they have a dual defense system. And they found out and figured out somehow ways, because you got a lot of legs here on this little bug. They said when you're bitten or stung, however it is done, by the venom that's meant for what they're going to have for lunch, a cricket, it doesn't hurt a human being. And what it does, it immobilizes their victim. However, the venom that is intended for a predator is far more toxic. No surprise there. They don't want to taste good to their predators. So they found, with the technology that they have today, that each of the glands, there's actually 20,000, they call them tiny toxin factories. And this one type of living species, a centipede, is so complex and so capable of doing things that nobody even knew anything about to the degree that we now know. Can you imagine 20,000 aspects in that small body that produces various toxins, and there are chemicals that will automatically compound and deliver what it needs to deliver in that one tiny insect. And they can even mix what they called toxic chemical cocktails. One species of critter on our planet that can do all of that. So, one of the zoologists that was involved in this study that found out about this information, his name is Michael Dugan, he said, when he was researching it, he said, all of the research we've done just on this centipede for the last 20 years, he said, there's a lot we still don't know about that one tiny creature. When you get into studying Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine, or you get into the martial arts and you start learning about history, human beings have progressed with their studying and observation of nature. It makes all the difference in the world. Our pharmaceutical products evolve from nature. This is something that when we can become aware of that, and that the planet we live on has so much available to us that can help us, it really makes you sort of humble. It makes you aware that as human beings, we have a capacity for investigating and finding out things. But actually, when you study nature, you find that there's an infrastructure within the natural environment that is extraordinarily powerful. And many times, people who have been good observers of nature find and recognize what is really going to serve us best. And it's trial and error. It's an intriguing perspective that I don't think we, well, might want to pass along to our younger generations, which is silly. Having that understanding of nature enables us to develop as we have to the technologies we have today. And we're even going further. There's no end, really, to what we are capable of learning. But when you study history and you look at the way people lived, what they did, what they had to work with, it's been a long process for us to get to this particular point. But the adventure is not over, not by a long shot. Oh, and by the way, and this I was very much aware of, and it has to do with flying. So many times people, well, individuals, I don't find that the masses get to be this irritated, but they'll be upset. Oh, my goodness, and my flight's delayed, so on and so forth. And by golly, if you've ever been in an area like Colorado or Arizona or even Texas, areas of the South, when those storms start coming in, you don't play games with them. Well, there is a publication that was put out in a magazine called Simple Flying, and it was about how storms can jolt planes quite seriously. And you might not even be all that close to a storm, but think about it. It's like ripples on a pond when you toss a rock into a pond. You're going to have those ripples going out on the water before the water will become still again. That is energy in motion. Storms do the same thing. They analyzed, apparently, because safety is always a big concern, 200 million turbulence measurements from commercial flights over the United States airspace between 2009 and 2017. And they cross-checked them with radar data tracking thunderstorm locations. And what they discovered, which is not a surprise to me at all, is that severe turbulence was almost 20 times more likely within 3 miles of a storm. They also found that there was light and moderate turbulence 55 miles away from the storm front. And that was nearly 3 times what the FAA's current storm avoidance guideline of 20 miles is. So you have these things. And when they cancel flights, I know I've had flights canceled because of weather conditions. Just hunker down. Don't get anxious about it. Just realize that that is the way it is. And that turbulence, I think the safety standards, they're getting even more and more realistic with those safety standards, just like what was mentioned. And I think that that is very, very important. Now, what is moderate turbulence? Well, moderate turbulence can really shake you up pretty severely. And it is going to be something as we become more and more able to recognize the impact of storms than how we can, if we get enough advance notice, how we can really have more safety environments that we can be in. And also, it's going to enable people. Now, this is just not for flying. This is, you think about the various places in the United States that have been affected, as we were here in the Pacific Northwest, with a cyclone bomb. I'd never heard of a cyclone bomb. Well, one hit us here. And I was in an area that we got an outer edge of it, and it hit heavy up in the northern area of Washington, and it did quite a bit of damage. So the understanding of air movements, etc., we're becoming even more sophisticated with. This also means we need to look at how we would build places that are going to survive that kind of a turbulence. If you have a wood frame home, it isn't necessarily going to make it. And there's just all kinds of things that we are becoming aware of that are really going to make a difference to people in the future. New building materials, understanding more effective insulation capabilities, dealing with water flows, how to build in a way and manner where you have energy, where you're able to have safe places for people to go to. This is something humanity has had to deal with over and over and over again. And with the way things are changing, and by the way, there were natives, and perhaps I've already mentioned this on my show, but there were natives up in the Bering Sea area that already said the earth has shifted. The poles have shifted to a degree. They see the sun rising and going down in different areas than in the past. That is a part of Earth's history. And we're experiencing that right now. So I wanted to share those couple of odds and ends of items. And then here we are in the winter months. And my goodness, my backyard thinks it's spring. We have had such warm temperatures. I think we're going to be having some freezing temperatures, oh, for about a week. And that's coming up shortly. And then it may not end up being that cold. And I don't think we're going to have any snow. But this has been incredibly warm. My geraniums are still blooming. That's unheard of. So anyway, if you want to get rid of that winter chill, there is a recipe that I found out about called the Winter Citrus Yogurt Bowl. Now, this is something that I think could satisfy your munch and crunch urge, like maybe mid-afternoon, if you've had a pretty busy day. And what it is, it's 2 cups of plain Greek yogurt, non-fat if you like, 1 orange, it can be a blood orange or a regular orange, you peel it and slice it into rounds, 1/4 cup of your favorite granola, 2 tablespoons of unsalted pepitas, or any nuts and seeds, you know, it could be flax, it could be chia, it could be pumpkin, whatever it is, your pleasure, 1/4 cup of fresh blueberries, And, of course, you have to rinse those off. And a tablespoon of honey if you wanted it sweetened a little bit. Just mix it all together. Very simple. Now, that's for 2 servings of the yogurt. And I just think that something like that, goodness gracious, that would even work during the summer. But it really is light, flavorful, and it'll give you that energy boost that you need. You know, one of the things that many times we're not aware of is that when we're working, we need to have sometimes glucose. And especially if you do a lot of mental work, having glucose makes, and that's just sugar, and that can come from so many different elements. It can come from a piece of bread. It can come from, you know, a candy bar. But whatever it is, when you have fruit, you're going to have glucose. And that goes into the brain immediately, revitalizing the brain. The brain actually can use up to 80% of any glucose that might be in your body, depending on what kind of work that you do. And the brain, that's it, it takes in the sugar. It does. So when you have a candy bar, or if you have something that is like some juice or a piece of fruit, or like the recipe I just shared with you, the reason that the uplift is so significant is because it's absorbed through the glands in your mouth and it goes right into the brain and you're refreshed. You're absolutely refreshed. So it's light, it's, you know, it's flavorful, and you could adapt it in whatever way you like. But remember, that is why you will have that afternoon slump, because you have burned up all that glucose that maybe you've used all day long, unless you're one of these people that snack incessantly all day long. That won't be the case. But this is something that really can make a difference. And that's why it's always good, especially if someone is hypoglycemic or even if you're diabetic. It has been said, and this goes for many generations, always carry something with you that is sweet, like a piece of hard candy. And it'll make all the difference in the world. It's just that little bit, that little bit. And I've experimented with it myself, and sometimes I've been in meetings that happened to me recently, and I wasn't hungry, but I was finding I was starting to get a headache. So I had a cup of tea, added a teaspoon of sugar, headache went away immediately. And it's very interesting how we all respond to certain things. And sugar is something that doesn't affect me in a negative way, but that little bit, just that teaspoon, was able to get rid of an oncoming headache that for me, because I'm hypoglycemic patterning typically, that meant that my blood sugar was dropping. And that little bit kept me going until I was able to, a few hours later, have, you know, a good meal. And I was just fine. And I didn't have the headache. So I share that with you because I think those little bits of information sometimes can come in handy. Just remember, just a little bit of something that has the sugar in it will make all the difference in the world. Donna Sebo here. I know that we're just about out of time. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. If you yearn to do something and you feel like there is that that you need to fulfill, be inspired by Bill Merrick, because Bill was able to complete what he had worked on so earnestly in a very timely manner, turning the project and assignment over to his wife, and she's carrying it forth. But he finished what he really wanted to do, and it was completed in an absolutely beautiful way. You can do the same with your life if you're willing to invest in yourself. Don't be afraid of that. Again, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. I'll be with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.